Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Movie Moan here at Think McFly Think. My name is Phil G, the English gentleman at your service. I have a bit of advice for you, ladies and gentlemen, tonight. I have discovered this week what is undoubtedly the greatest sentence ever spoken by man. And I believe if you speak this sentence every day, good things will happen to you. All you have to do is get out of bed in the morning and say the following. Timothy Dalton to play thespian hedgehog toy in Toy Story 3. If you say that sentence every morning before you head off to work or whatever, good things will happen to you, for it is the greatest sentence ever spoken by man. So there you are. Don't say I don't do anything for you. As like I say, my name's Phil G. Joining me across the way in Louisiana is Mr. Jamie Williams.
Hello, good sir. How are you this week?
I'm good, like I say. I say that every day, and good things happen to me.
You're especially happy that Timothy Dalton is getting... he's been getting high-profile gigs lately. Because if Phil and
I'm
We love Timothy Dalton, and the restraining order is still up. But nonetheless, his bond predates Daniel Craig's approach by about 20 years, and people shit on him 20 years ago. Like, oh, he's just boring. Who wants to have a realistic bond? And, you know, Craig's here, and people love him for being the, quote, realistic bond. Hey...
Well, I thought you said you didn't like License to Kill.
I didn't, but I like Living Daylights a lot, and I like Dalton in both of those. I liked certain things about License to Kill, but that was the quintessential 80s movie. Like, the most 80s Bond ever got, and ironically enough, it was the very end of the decade, I thought.
Although I will say I have not seen Looney Tunes Back in Action, which he's in.
Oh, and I liked him in that, too. But anyway,
I'm sure he's great.
I'm sure he's great, but also joining us is our friend from the coast, Mr. Ed Hawken. Say hello, sir.
Hi there, and speaking of taking things as a good omen, I myself just saw the Death Proof car last week, 3 days in a row. So talk about, you know, good omens. So you got to take it where you can get it.
As long as Kurt Russell was not in the car. No, he was not
in the car, okay, and there weren't any obnoxious, unlikable women standing around just talking about nothing nearby either. The car is just sitting there in the parking structure.
Or Eli Roth drinking, like, uncontrollably, as he did in Death Proof. Which, I make fun of the guy, but he was
awesome. No one was eating chili, so...
There you go. I liked the first hour of Death Proof. I just didn't like the second half, because it literally just repeat... It was a repeat of the second half.
Death Proof was a big slog for me. I think the best part is obviously when you realize how much of a bitch stuntman Mike is after he gets hurt towards the end, the way he's screaming and grabbing for the booze. That was hilarious.
That was great acting, because you really think for a second, like, oh my God, Kurt Russell's a pussy. But no, it's performance. That's Snake Plissken we're talking about, and Captain Ron, if you will, so no one will make fun of Captain Ron. And of course, the character from Used Cars, whose name escapes me. Ed knows, though. What's the character's name?
Oh my God! I forgot.
God
his name.
Damn it,
I think
Hawken.
It's Rudy something.
That's not good enough. You've failed.
I haven't watched Used Cars in a while.
That's hard to believe. I thought you lived your life by that movie, sir.
No, 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 no. I live my life by True Romance. What are you talking about?
That's a good pick too. A little reference to Tarantino there. But anyway, so Timothy Dalton is talking about what we, you know, talked about a second ago. He's going to join the cast of Toy Story 3. Further proof that Pixar is big about casting the right actor instead of just getting some, you know, flavor of the month, you know, fucking twerp. Like, you know, starring Dane Cook as so-and-so. I mean, that seems to be the
Channing Tatum's not going to be in this movie?
I'm
God
shocked,
damn
dude.
It.
I mean, it, but
or Sam Worthington.
If,
that too.
Ooh. Sam Worthington's lawyers are contacting us as we speak. No, but... Like, I don't know, that's the DreamWorks approach. Like, you know, Pixar, I mean, you know, the ultimate proof, as Phil and I are talking off air, that Pixar really means, they really mean it about finding the right actor, is like when they got Craig T. Nelson to play Mr. Incredible, and they got Ellen DeGeneres for Finding Nemo back when she hadn't had her comeback yet. I think it was around that time, that, and then the talk show was when she sort of, people loved her again. But there was that point where people didn't like her, and, like, they went with her when no one else would. And... Who else? I mean, Timothy Dalton, obviously. You told me that, Phil, that the original lead who played the dad in Finding Nemo
Marlin.
Was who?
Marlin is his name.
Marlin. Who originally played Marlin was not Albert Brooks, as hard as that to believe. It was actually William H. Macy, you said. And either actor, you wouldn't think someone would be wanting to put, you know, a big – epic story like that on the shoulders of that actor. And yet, even though it's a, you know, it was voice work, still, nonetheless, and they put it on those guys. Just tells you a lot about, and it's worked out for them. I mean, you know, they. I mean, another example is I'm gonna keep going on until I run out of examples, but it's
Craig T. Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson. I said that earlier, I think.
Oh, damn it.
That's okay. Ben Burtt as Wally. I mean, come on. Shit. I mean, R2-D2 as Wally? Seems like perfect casting, and yet that movie was insanely successful and popular. But anyway,
if Incredibles was DreamWorks, they would have got Stallone for Mr. Incredible. Not a doubt in my mind, because he did Ants for them.
He
so
did
I think they
do
just
Ants.
Would have got him again.
I will say, though, and speaking of Ants...
It could have been alright.
I will say, you know, we shit on DreamWorks, and yet Ants, you know, who was the lead? Woody Allen. Who'd have thought, you know, and like Jennifer Lopez back when she wasn't annoying, and Sharon Stone before she went insane. So, I mean, you know, just thinking ahead, and Prince of Egypt was pretty decent. That was Val Kilmer, I think, as Moses, which just sounds so wrong for so many reasons, but, you know.
I don't know if you knew this, but actually the director of Prince of Egypt, Brenda Chapman, is directing a film for Pixar right now.
Really? Which one's that?
It's called The Bear and the Bow. I believe it's out on Christmas Day 2011. It's their first classic fairy tale. It's about a princess played by Reese Witherspoon who dreams about becoming an archer. And I guess there's a bear involved in there somehow. The plot details are sketchy right now.
Maybe it's like BJ and the Bear and it's really a monkey. They can call it the bear. Maybe it's like
Wait,
that.
Who's driving? Bear's driving.
Oh my god, Bear is driving. How can that be?
That was oh my god, Bear is in car. Is that what that was a great cartoon. God, if the Clark's cartoon we're referring to. If only that had lasted longer. I would have loved to have seen it. Anyway,
what I think is hilarious about this though is that as far as I know, the Pixar process of casting the right actors is usually they design the character first and then they create, like, a little piece of animation or something, and they get a voice clip of the actor they're thinking of, and they loop it to that animation to see if it fits, like they did that for Tom Hanks when they wanted to get him to play Woody. They showed him this clip they'd done of Woody with a line from Turner and Hooch to show him that this could actually work, that it sounded like him, and he said, oh, wow, it does work. It does sound like me.
I did not know that.
It's true, and when they were doing... when they were finding out who they wanted to play Syndrome, they used lines from Dogma, where Jason Lee plays the villain in Dogma, and they put that to Syndrome, and it worked. So this is how they find the voices a lot of the time. So I just want to know how, we're told he's playing a hedgehog, how they had this piece of animation of a hedgehog and decided, let's get a clip from License to Kill and put it to that hedgehog, and let's see if it fits. And it fit, apparently. I just can't wait to see what this character looks like.
I
want to
see what the clip was. Was it the scene in License to Kill where he throws the guy in the shark tank? Like, that? That's what I was...
I like to think it was the scenes from Hot Fuzz where he said he's a slasher of prices.
It probably was, actually, knowing the Pixar people. It probably was. Or, you know what? You know, fuck that. It was probably Rocketeer. Who are we kidding? Disney, you know. Well, not a slight against...
Jenny. It was acting.
Not a strike against Disney. I love Rocketeer, but actually the other good thing about this news is that they also confirmed they confirmed what we all suspected what the story was going to be, which is Andy grows up and the toys have to find a new home, and they end up in a daycare center. We assumed that was going to be the ending because that was the ending to the first incarnation of Toy Story, like when they had the first story outline for it. I believe that's how it ended. And instead it actually goes further where the daycare is horrible and the children abuse them, so they have to abandon the daycare center to find their true home. That sounds even better, actually. It's like, boy, I can't wait to see this. I'm expecting the kind of reception to, the song When She Loved Me from Toy Story 2. I'm expecting that kind of reaction from people next Christmas. So next Christmas, next summer, heavens. Let's not tease everybody. That's when Phil gets it. It's not when Ed and I get it.
You son of a bitch. Don't you dare say that. I'm going to check IMDb later and find it. I hope that's not true.
I hope it's not true for your sake, sir, but it comes out like in the beginning of June of next summer. You say you can wait.
Yeah,
this
one I can't wait for. I don't
know. Yeah, I know. That's the one you can't wait for because it's like it is so weird to think we're getting it like 11 years after 2, and 2 was pretty damn great. So I'm really looking forward to it, though. I don't think they'll disappoint.
I'm really excited because I don't think they've ever really explored the idea that children, even from a young age, you know, children today maybe they don't give a shit about toys. Like, you know, you remember Sid, the child from the first one who tortured his toys? He tortured them, but he cared about the toys. I mean, he cared about them so he could destroy them. He didn't just ignore them.
Always care about them. What are you talking about?
Kids always care about toys. That will the end of time.
No. You're not going to see five-year-olds with Blackberries. Not yet.
Well, so, not yet. I mean, I've seen five-year-olds with cell phones.
They're going to be, it always goes on, so.
So they're getting their diaper changed and they're having, a conference call on a Blackberry at the same time? I don't think we're there yet. We're not there yet, maybe in about 30 years when we're, old, but.
It's also probably coming full circle because the original short film which inspired Toy Story called Tin Toy was about this monstrous baby who tries to hunt down and kill this little marching band wind-up soldier, and he's running around the playpen trying to get away from this little kid, this little toddler. He's trying to do God knows what to it. So it's interesting. Maybe it's
coming
full circle here.
Anyway, yeah, so there's that. Also this week, I don't know if I can say it was the big news this week, but Warner Brothers is finally getting their shit together with DC comic books. Now it's called DC Entertainment. They've pulled all of the rights from various producers like Joel Silver and I think Chuck Roben.
Amen.
And basically the plan is that if they give it back to them, they're going to get it at a lower deal, won't be as expensive. They're trying to basically, out-Marvel Marvel at this point. And they're saying that they will have a full-scale plan announced by the start of next year. We hear those kind of things all the time, like, oh, yeah, early next year. We'll see. But it's good that they've had a fire lit under their ass after all this time. Some people are saying that, oh, well, this is their reaction to Disney by Marvel, to which, Nikki Finke, who broke the story, said, nope, it's not the case. This was always in they were planning this for quite some time. They had to just work everything out. I think the big thing that stopped from really happening was getting Jeff Robinoff's contract renewed. He's the number two guy at the studio right now. He's basically being prepped to take over the company. And I guess this is going to be his big... I forgot who they put in charge of the DC lines. Whoever was in charge of the Harry Potter films.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, I think that's...
I know what you're talking about, but
I forgot her name. I feel bad for forgetting right now. I'm terribly sorry if you're listening to this. But it's a good plan. I mean, hopefully this all works out. That means we'll get more DC films. I know we're getting... they're getting their shit together slowly. I mean, next year we've got The Losers, which I think will do rather well because... it's in a similar kind of Wanted-esque, it's based on a graphic novel, not involving superheroes, so that comes out in, I think, April or March. You've got Jonah Hex coming out, coincidentally enough, the same weekend as Toy Story 3, which will be slaughtered, and then you've got Green Lantern in summer 2011, and beyond that, I know that they're doing the Lobo movie, supposedly, but... yeah, I believe that when I see it.
See, Lobo should have been done 20 years ago with Randy Savage as the lead.
Nice. Oh yeah, brother! I'm gonna take out some Martians and kill them. Yeah,
I'm hoping now that they've taken Wonder Woman away from Joel Silver, it might actually get made.
Yeah, I still don't think they'll make a Wonder Woman movie. I think that's one. I think there was a rumor that Jeff Robinoff had made some kind of comments about no one wants to go see a Wonder Woman movie. Supposedly he made. I don't remember if that was him or someone else who said that, but I don't want to put words in his mouth.
That's nonsense.
I just don't think... I don't see that... I don't know. I think it's the same feeling I have about, The Flash, where it's like, you would have to do it really expensive to pull it off, and if you're pitching it to a bunch of executives, you say, okay, this movie's going to cost $230 million to make, and, you go, what's he do? And you go, well, he runs really fast. Well, what else does he do? He runs really fast. And they go, okay, no thanks. I mean, you have to be able... if you're spending that kind of money, you got to be able to do more than just, oh, he runs really fast. That's my feeling about why you'll never see a Flash movie. And I could be wrong on that. And if you do a Justice League movie, then yeah, obviously Flash will be a part of that group. But I just can't see a solo Flash movie ever getting made. Green Lantern, he's got multiple powers involved, with the power ring and whatnot. You got Superman and Batman. So those are the three that we obviously know are going to happen. But that aside, and the lower tier characters, as we mentioned, the Losers and whatnot, I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
But with Wonder Woman, we're talking about a character that everybody knows, even if they don't know her. Even if they don't know her origin, everybody knows the name. you know,
yeah, they know
do they know what she does?
Exactly.
Was, I don't
they don't know. They don't know.
So maybe she.
There. Yeah. You know, people. If you, people know there's a Wonder Woman movie, people know the name. Sometimes that's all that counts. You know, then as long as the movie's good, people will see it, and
hopefully.
It's not ludicrously priced.
Yeah, it would be. That would probably be another one. They spend a lot of money. I mean, movies are getting more expensive, the way things are right now, and they're trying to be very. Responsible what they're gonna with what they're gonna spend their money on, so they're gonna throw all their big money towards Green Lantern right now, and then when they get the next Superman going, that's gonna cost a lot of money, and obviously Batman 3 is gonna cost an arm and a leg, preferably not mine. But I don't know beyond that, to be honest.
I mean, couldn't you say? I mean, you're saying that nobody knows what Wonder Woman does. You could say that about Iron Man. You could have said that about X-Men when that first
came out.
People knew X-Men. Let's be fair here. They knew X-Men. Iron Man, yeah, you can make the argument. Iron Man, it's like, well, he's you know, it's not so much. Yeah, you're right about Iron Man, but X-Men, no. They knew
no, it. But see, Iron Man, though, you knew the suit, and also that it was also because you had Robert Downey. You could figure a guy like that would have, you know, he's perfect for Tony Stark. That you would have to get an unknown for Wonder Woman. There's no one, I mean, otherwise. Because of the way she's built, you know, she's, you know, this tall Amazonian. She's not, you know, I can't think of an actress that would be like that, would have that kind of athletic ability. Although it's kind of funny, I mean, I'm trying to figure out, if she is that athletic, there's no way she's going to have tits that big. I don't know. I'm looking at the anatomy here. And
Well, that'll be CGI'd in. Don't worry about it. You know.
CGI tits?
Oh, yeah, okay. I think so. That'll be they'll get Joel Silver to make it. And then, I mean, not Joel Silver, Joel Schumacher. I just ruined my own joke. Damn it! But, I know.
Let's see what's like. Megan Fox would be Wonder Woman. She's not tall. She's small.
The acting thing is...
That too, acting. But
I mean, you know,
you're gonna need an unknown. I mean, and you know, people know the icon of Wonder Woman. They don't know the powers.
Nope.
Can anyone name a villain from Wonder Woman? No. Can anyone, you know, exactly explain her story? No. Her powers? No. They know there are you know, bracelets that deflect bullets,
right.
And she got a rope.
Truth lasso.
That's about
is that
it.
Right. The truth lasso.
Invisible plane.
Yeah, I want to see that.
You got it. No. In the Justice League cartoon,
I'm
she can
joking.
Fly.
No, she does. In the Super Friends cartoon, she had the invisible jet and shit.
She
I want to see
I'm
that.
I'm just saying. That'd be not going to happen.
That would be bad. That's if Steven Summers made it. Then it would have
the only thing that's interesting about Wonder Woman, I would say, is the fact that the story that would be more interesting is the guy who created it. The guy who invented the lie detector, and he liked being tied up. So
that's, you know, it's funny. That's very similar to another movie that we didn't talk about in the podcast. We did a post on a while ago about. I think it was, I don't know if it was Schuster or Siegel's. One of them did artwork for these old S&M comic books, and that happened to be, I don't even got what happened, but like they ended up reading a bunch of Jewish American kids who were Jewish American neo-Nazis who went on a killing spree, and they basically blamed these S&M comic books that he happened to be an artist on during the 1950s. Apparently they're actually making a movie about this. That sounds interesting as shit.
Oh, like, no, there are some amazing stories when it comes to the rise of the comic book. There are two books I always say that are the best sources on this. Men of Tomorrow, and then more importantly, The 10-Cent Plague. The 10-Cent Plague expands on a period of comics which about basically from the late 40s to the early 50s when, you know, basically there was a mass panic that people thought comics led to juvenile delinquency.
That was one
but,
of the things.
But, yeah, the stories...
Go ahead.
You know, type, you know, basically these first-generation American Jewish guys that are, you know, into the field of comics. And just like any other field, I mean, all the great superheroes we know today, how they come about? Because they ripped off each other. It's
totally.
Such a great story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people... I don't know. I mean, you talk about, like, comic book people recognizing comic books, the average Joe. People know three superheroes, and that's it. Like, if you ask any person on Earth a comic book superhero, you would get three characters everyone fucking knows, and that is Batman, Spider-Man, Superman. That's it. That's
and you have all the knockoff characters like, that have similar powers. That's why, like,
that's
why
so
would we want a Captain Marvel movie?
Go ahead, Phil.
I would say Hulk. You could argue everyone knows the Hulk.
I would say
that's lower than Spider-Man.
Yeah, those three are the one. Those are the most iconic three. You say those. It's those three characters you think about. Everyone knows those three characters. That's it, really. I mean, someone might say, "Oh, Wolverine." Like, nah, not really.
No.
That's X. You can lump X-Men all together, and out of X-Men, Wolverine is the most popular, but have the X-Men.
So, I mean, I don't know. It could be interesting. I'm just glad they're finally getting their shit together. We'll see what kind of movies end up coming about out of this. I mean, obviously they've got to get another Superman film in 2 years, or they lose the rights or something like that. There's so much bullshit going on with what actually they will and won't lose, won't lose anything, because there's going to be a settlement. Let's not even kid ourselves. They just settled with, you know, the Tolkien estate just settled with Warner Brothers or Time Warner about The Hobbit. They're going to settle with the Schusters and Siegels. I mean, who the fuck doesn't think that's going to happen? Seriously. Come on. Go ahead, Phil.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I heard a remark, maybe I misquoted him, but one of the presidents behind, I think it was DC Comics, who said they won't be moving on a Superman movie until they know what Nolan's doing as regarding Batman 3. What excuse is that?
That was a year ago. That was an old quote, actually.
Yeah.
That old quote was they basically said, we don't know. It's not that we won't move forward with it, it's that we don't know when we'll release it. When we know what no one's going to do next, then we'll know where to put the next Superman movie. So at the time, Batman 3 was supposed to come out 2011. Obviously, that's not happening now. It's going to be, at the very least, 2012. I think it's going to be 2013, and I could be wrong on that, but I think that's when we get Batman 3. But so you're probably looking at a Superman movie. You're probably looking at another Superman movie by 2012. Probably is my guess on that one. But anyway, I don't know if you guys have anything else to add to that one.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I just don't know what to make of it right now. I mean, I don't think they've got their shit together yet. I mean, I commend them for getting Green Lantern off the ground, technically, sort of. We'll see. I don't know if they've put
Phil on this.
Film yet.
You know, the track record has been terrible.
Oh, God.
But, you know, we'll see if they'll get it off the ground. Hey, maybe this could mean we could finally have a Creeper movie.
Ragman. Ragman the movie. That's what I want to see.
What are you going to see?
Ragman. Or Swamp Thing. Or Swamp Thing. We can get like a guy. Although a Swamp Thing with that Dick DeRock in that suit just seems so weird to me. I can't imagine.
You can't. Or Louis Jordan. You can't make Swamp Thing without Louis Jordan, who's still kicking, by the way. He's still alive.
Oh, my God.
He is.
Louis Jordan.
He's just retired.
Retired from what? I haven't seen him do. Well, I mean, I haven't seen him do an American movie in a while, to be fair. I was about to say, people don't really... I mean, everyone knows him from... Actually, I would say most people know Louis Jordan for Swamp Thing than they do even Octopussy, actually. I think that... I will go as far as say that. I'm sorry?
No, I'm surprised by that. I thought everyone in America had seen Octopussy. I thought that was one bomb movie everyone's seen.
It is, but it's like...
Yeah, I must have seen that movie twice.
That's what I mean.
See? That's not so bad. of all Bond movies to pick for that joke. But speaking of Warner Brothers, we'll segue real quickly. Another movie that's been a movie that's been on again, off again, etc., is the live-action Akira film, which they're making with
already been done. It was done in the Kanye West video for Stronger.
Check it out, folks, YouTube.
It's an awesome video.
So Collider says that they're getting back up on another Akira script. They should be having a draft handed in pretty soon by, I'm pronouncing their names wrong, I hope I am, Mark Fergus and Hawk Ostby. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your names. They're the guys who are credited, the key word being they are credited for writing Iron Man and Children of Men, when in fact, you know, those movies... The final product differed greatly from the scripts they turned in, but they were listed nonetheless. They are actually writing the Akira script very hush-hush, Collider reported. If they like the script, they'll move forward with it, maybe for 2011. I'm not holding my breath on that.
I agree. This project should have died a long time ago. The anime is fine the way it is. There's no reason to make this live action. It's unfilmable live action, especially at the end when you have that evolution scene. I mean, the amount of money that's going to have to go into pull some off, that's going to be horrifying and probably very gross.
Yeah, you'll believe an audience. An audience will lose their lunch. You know, that's
going to
be
a bigger moth.
There you go. Actually, that's the better phrase. I mean, that's just like, oh my God. As a kid, I saw the anime film on the Sci-Fi Channel. Used to do that every year. They'd have a thing. I forgot what it was called. I was going to say Japanimation, but it wasn't called that. It was called something else, and they would play anime films, and they always played Akira for some reason.
I mean that anime. I mean, you know what? It's not. It's a landmark film for me. I mean, I could be wrong. I know there were earlier anime movies released in the U.S., but I remember this being the first major one.
It was
that hit the theaters back in '89, and it's a landmark film. It's not perfect.
No.
And then the other thing is the fact that, I mean, people always complain about the ending, and you know the ending's I still can't figure it out, but. The manga itself is multi-volume. There's no way you're gonna do a two-hour movie about this.
They had to condense the hell out of it just for the anime film.
Yeah,
telling you something.
How the hell are they gonna do live action?
They'll be pitching two movies. Sure, they will.
Well, no, I mean that was the original plan, but what Collider reported last week was that it's one movie, and it's gonna be one very expensive movie if they like it. But
it would be an expensive movie regardless.
That's true, but the other thing is, like, they're going to want to make it R-rated. They're going to, I mean, you know, the reason why I don't think this will happen is, you know, one word, or technically two, Watchmen. There you go. It's one word. Okay, one word. Thank you, Phil. I mean, that was a great movie. It was very complex and dense and very expensive, and it failed. I'm sorry. I hate to say that because it was great.
For a hard R, multi-hour-plus movie, and that's Watchmen.
Yeah.
Akira's even more complex plot-wise, because no one's going to sit down and read a multi-volume. Watchmen is one book.
Yeah.
You know, obviously of several issues, but it's one book. Akira's many books. There's no way you're going to sit down and listen to this. I mean, let's just call it is what it is. We might as well just have a live-action Batman Beyond movie.
Which they were trying to make at one point, so...
I know. Clint Eastwood was supposed to be old Bruce Wayne.
Was that true, or was that just a rumor?
I had heard this rumor.
Okay.
So...
Well, I mean, it's the internet. They can't lie. It must be true. Yeah, Clint Eastwood is old Bruce Wayne. I could see that.
I disagree slightly with the good captain. I don't think I've learnt my lesson from other movies. I'm no longer of the mindset that anything is unfilmable. I'm not going to say that because we've seen plenty. We were told they were unfilmable. I know it's not commercially viable. I agree with you on that. I don't think it's possible to make an Akira movie that is going to please its fans and make something that is going to be acceptable to a mass audience that isn't going to repulse people. I'm thinking of those big tentacly blob things in the climax. It's not going to work. But I don't think it's unfilmable. I just think it's very, very... It's not going to get made. There's a difference.
Well, the other problem, though, is they said that it's set in New Manhattan instead of New Tokyo. And
oh, that's not good.
Exactly. Right there. I was about to go into a spiel, but you just basically said right there, that's not good. Because what do you think about? What did we just talk about last week? What happened last Friday? 9/11. That immediately brings the 9/11 parable to itself, and that's just making it a little.
Yeah, and the thing about Akira is that the reason it's New Tokyo and it works so well is that, obviously in the setup is that there's a nuclear explosion. I think there are World War, you know, there's certainly maybe I'm wrong, but there are World War II, you know, fascism parallels with the government,
right?
And the way the society is, it just works better as an anime. This goes back to the fact that in animation you have the freedoms that in live action do not. And really, I'm the more I think about there, you shouldn't really be doing live-action translations of animes. You know, with the Death Note movie, which looks terrible. And then the idea of Keanu Reeves, God, why? He's doing Cowboy Bebop. As much as I'd love to see a live-action Cowboy Bebop movie would be pretty good, but not with him in it. But more importantly, I don't know if it would work.
I tell you what you could do, and it would be huge if you did it properly, is Kashern. I know they did a Japanese version, live action, back in 2004 that I have. But you could do an Americanized version of that, and it could be actually pretty badass. I maintain that's one of the few.
Not only that, but the thing is, you can do like a direct. I mean, the thing is, you don't want to make an exact translation.
No.
I mean, that hair defies anime hair defies all laws of physics.
Also, their designs of human beings defies all logic too. I mean, good
that
God.
Too.
Dragon Ball Evolution.
I didn't see, and I'm not going to. But then again,
they gave it a go. They gave it a go, at least.
Are you talking about the hair? You gotta be.
Yeah, they tried to do the hair.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it worked, but they tried.
Well, the movie didn't work.
biggest waste of $100 million ever. You might as well have just given Tyler Perry $100 million to make
a movie. You might as well just did the Joker didn't light the money on fire.
I would have rather seen, like, Tyler Perry's Medea goes back in time and fights in the Civil War instead of a Dragon Ball movie. That would have been money better spent, in my opinion.
Yeah, right. Especially Dragon Ball, of all things.
Yeah, I know. It's like, really, Dragon Ball? I mean, like, what's next? Big O the movie, for God's sake? I mean, come on.
Naruto the movie?
I mean, just so many yeah. bad ideas. But anyway.
Well, not only that, because most like anything else, and this has been talked about before in other you know sites, is that like anime, like any other media, the majority and a large majority of it is utter incomprehensible shit.
Yeah.
I came in contact with this the first time around with Ghost in the Shell 2. That movie pissed me off to no end. That movie was awful, and Ghost in the Shell 1 was pretty good. But once again, it works so well. As an anime, I don't know if you either of you had seen the original Ghost in the Shell.
No.
I mean the movie, not the series.
I wasn't that impressed with it myself.
Well, if you remember,
there's one scene I like a lot in the first Ghost in the Shell, and you could never do this in live. It'd be disturbing as hell live action. I don't think you could do it. Is when that, I forgot her, the agent's name, but when she's on the tank and she's trying to pry the tank open, and the way how muscular she gets, and she pretty much like blows out her own system due to the strain. That there's no way you could do that live action. And, anime is, like I said, any other medium, and most of the stuff is such utter garbage.
Spielberg,
better off.
Spielberg, actually, I believe the story was that he bought back when my Screen Rant days, we reported that Spielberg had bought the rights to, or DreamWorks bought the rights to Ghost in the Shell as a live-action 3D movie, if you guys remember that. And of course,
he also wanted to do Lupin the Third, which actually could make a good, live-action movie, because it's about an international thief. I remember, like, they wanted Jason Lee as Lupin, but,
that would have been
I don't know. I mean, that could be a fun romp of a movie, I figure you set it period, but it's going to be like Tintin. No one knows who the hell that is. So.
Yeah. No, and that's only getting made because Steven Spielberg wants to make it. So. Thus, I
still don't know what the hell a Tintin movie is going to consist of.
I don't know, but apparently Simon Pegg and Nick Frost will be a part of it somehow. So.
It's one of those things that just defies all logic. It's a child, and he doesn't have parents. No one seems to question where his guardians are.
Tintin.
No, Snowy is the dog.
Snowy's the dog. Tintin is the kid. He's going to be a little older. And I think in the comic, he's like 16 or 17. They're going to make him a little bit older, like 19 or 20, I think. I believe I heard that somewhere. He's not going to be a child per se. He's being played by Jamie Bell, who... yeah, he was in Billy Elliot, but now he's actually grown into it. I remember when Billy Elliot came out, and I was never a fan of that film, but he's actually turned himself into a pretty decent actor, even in garbage like, what's that flick he did?
I heard he was good in Jumper.
Jumper, yeah, so that's one. Jumper, which was a pretty terrible-looking movie, which I refused to sit through, but I heard he's pretty decent in that. And he was good in King Kong and shit, and so he's, he's not bad. He's got a lot of promise and shit, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
But I remember one Tintin book, which I own, is where they go against the Japanese, and of course, as you would expect, the Japanese villains, when he eventually confronts them, have two big teeth. From their top lips, it's the
nice.
Typical
it's from the period where there was, big racial stereotypes. It's like, the old Looney Tunes cartoons of the day, especially around World War II. I mean,
right.
That was the mindset. And
back when racism was socially acceptable. I wonder what would happen if, like, Crash had come out in the 1950s instead of, like, 2005. Like,
there's no way Crash would have came out.
How heavy-handed it would have been in the 1950s instead of, a couple of years ago, that piece of garbage. Now it's a TV show, apparently, with Dennis Hopper, of all people, and Eric Roberts. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. But,
Dennis Hopper was in Crow 4. That on the,
And he was also in Super Mario Brothers, enough said.
Yeah,
playing Koopa.
But since Tintin is a UK thing, does that mean they're going to make a Biggles movie at some point? Is that what that is? I'm remembered from Cracker, so.
I'm looking forward to the Benny Hill movie.
Oh, that'd
I
be
would
a good
just
idea.
Like
the Benny Hill biopic?
No, just a Benny Hill movie. Just like an updated version of Benny Hill skits, just for, like, at a cost of $200 million.
We need to call Stephen Fry right now.
I would just like to clarify for you uneducated swines that Tintin is not a British thing. It's a Belgian thing.
I thought it was a French thing.
Yes, see, there you go. It all blends together. Belgian, French, whatever. But no, it's we are just one of the many countries that, you know, it was translated into, and we had to sit through the cartoon every Sunday because there was no other cartoon.
That was not a good cartoon. That I remember as a kid, that was not a good cartoon at all.
No, it wasn't.
Very bad. But before we get to our main topic of the day, one more big news item I thought we'd get to.
Sorry.
Yeah, Phil, go ahead. You seem to have a lot of...
1972, a crack team of commandos.
You know, it's funny you say that because that's actually the most I know about the A-Team. I know the opening credits sequence. I've never watched a single episode. I know enough about it, I guess. I mean, that's what I get
from
the show. So, but it always seemed like the movie, the TV show that would be made into a movie. They were always going to make one. I never had a doubt about that. It was just going to be, okay, who's going to be the A-Team? So we've got our A-Team, apparently. I mean, you know, Liam Neeson is going to be Hannibal Smith, which is not who I would have thought of at all. Bradley Cooper is Face, and this week we've got news that UFC champ, which I don't even watch UFC, so that doesn't mean anything to me. Rampage Jackson is going to be B.A. Baracus, and our very own hero, Sholto Copley, aka Wickus from the insanely awesome District 9, is in the running to play Madman Murdock. Or not, it's Howling Mad Murdock, actually.
Howling Mad Murdock. The offer is on the table.
Offer's on the table, according to blackfilm.com. They got the exclusive on that. It's not been confirmed or denied by his reps, which means it's probably true. He certainly looks the part, and I think it's awesome for him because, hey, it's a high-profile gig. It means he's going to get paid a lot more money than he did District 9, and this movie will probably do I don't know if it'll do well. Who knows? But
Oh, man, everyone's going to see this. I'm convinced of it now with this cast.
Absolutely. I don't know.
And you know what? When I think about it, when I read it this week, first of all, I had no idea Bradley Cooper was playing Face. That news completely...
That's been out for a while. Actually, one of those things, like, it was broken to the point where, like, ISB broke it, and then, like, they actually went to Bradley Cooper, and if I remember correctly, he denied it, and the whole time he was lying his ass off. He was just like, no, I'm not involved. And it's like, yeah, I really was. You know, it's like, that's how like, far in advance they called that.
That is going to be the easiest role of his career. He won't have to do anything except flash that smile of his, drive fast cars and pick up chicks. He doesn't even have to do anything.
Well,
he's
going
to play himself.
I'm sure he's going to be fine in that role. I was always thinking of Jason Bateman as Face. I was really much like, he should play. That's the perfect role for Jason Bateman, is to play Face. He's a handsome guy. Like, why not? And that didn't happen. And I thought for Hannibal, I thought also that was a complete given who should play Hannibal Smith. Of course, Kurt Russell. So neither of my ideas got past.
Well, the idea, you must have been thinking that it was going to be more of a comedy.
Well, no, it would be an action movie with some comedy in it. Like, why not throw some comedy in it? But like, it would certainly be an action film over a comedy. You know, this casting basically tells you it's an action movie. Like, there'll be some comedy, but it's mostly an action film from the sounds of it by this cast.
I just know everyone's gonna get they're gonna get a boner once that theme music hits the trailer.
Yeah.
I just hope it's not gonna be like remixed and like thankfully new metal died several years ago, but like they did with In the Air Tonight, that terrible cover for Miami Vice.
Yeah, I was thinking of Miami Vice.
Dragnet too. Do you remember Dragnet?
Yes.
Oh, that was hilarious, though.
Yeah, that was the point. They were purposely trying to make it silly.
Oh, right. Well, okay.
Well, the question now becomes who's playing the villain.
I feel silly.
Who plays the villain in this movie? I'm looking for
James Woods.
Yeah, that's Phil's casting for everything now. It's James Woods because that's his favorite actor, as you know. When did James Woods become James Woods? Because I was actually watching...
James Woods was always James Woods.
I don't
he
know.
Was James Woods in Videodrome. He was James Woods in The Onion Field.
Was it that far back, though? Was it that far back with Videodrome where he was James Woods?
Yeah.
God.
The way he delivers Long Live the New Flesh, I was totally shocked. I thought it was going to be this glorious thing that he says. And he says, Long Live the New Flesh, after he guns down that guy. So I was totally surprised how deadpan it was.
Movie did in 1984 called Against All Odds with Jeff Bridges. I don't know if that was before Videodrome, but
that was after.
Was it after? Oh, right, fair enough.
Videodrome was 83, I think. 82, 83.
Right.
I forget which one offhand.
And The Onion Field was 79, so.
And, of course, I think of El Salvador, which was 86, same year as Platoon.
James Woods has always been James Woods, so.
Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know when that became, you know, came into effect. Like, certain actors, they become, like, you know, Christopher Walken always plays Christopher Walken. That's the way I think of it. And, yeah, James Woods is James Woods. I'm trying to think of a few others offhand who always play that type of role. And
well, the most famous one is Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Yeah, that's funny. Everyone gives him so much credit. And he is a great actor, but he's basically doing a variation of himself in every movie, with the exception of, I know it's debatable between Ed and myself, but about Schmidt, I think he's not playing himself whatsoever.
Well, I haven't seen about Schmidt.
Oh, you haven't?
I'm very afraid of that Kathy Bates nudity. So.
Fast forward.
I'll keep my hand up.
You can get one of those, like, what was it? Remember when Titanic came out on a video and, like, some Christian group decided to cut their own version? Like, you could buy the VHS tape and they would literally open up the tape and cut the nude scene out and then resplice it. I don't know why, but apparently this really happened. And there's a website where you can order movies that are edited. I'm not making this up.
I don't think I'll buy into that, but dumbest shit I've ever.
Just so stupid. Like, just fast forward it. There's a fast forward button on all DVD players and remotes. Use it, for God's sake. Like, really? Come on.
Well, they never would have had to do that with the A-Team TV show, because no one ever died in it. I mean, that was the big joke.
Well, apparently they don't know how to shoot right. They just, like, there's no such thing as, like, pointing, like, just, like, shooting around. Hopefully we don't have that in the movie, but I'm excited
about
it.
The most famous one is where a helicopter actually crashes into a cliff and falls and explodes at the bottom, and the guy just come out.
You know what, that sounds like A View to a Kill bad, I must say, you just describing that.
You leave View to a Kill alone, it's got Christopher Walken in it.
It does have Christopher Walken. And Tanya Roberts too, and Grace Jones, so that destroys your argument. Boom.
It's true. No?
Yeah.
But I mean, the A-Team, I mean, one of the things that it makes me believe sometimes in fate and how the planets align. I think when I heard about the final lineup of the four of the A-Team, I thought, do you know what? Fate was stopping this movie from getting made until these four guys were available, and these four came together. All they were waiting for was for Sharlto to come in and, you know, hit the big time. And now it has come together, because it was never going to be Jim Carrey. Never. He was too high priced. They needed someone who was affordable, and yet, you know, everybody suddenly knows and can get excited about. And now they've found him, and he's perfect. And now the fates will allow the A-Team to happen. And for the first time this week, I said, this movie's happening. And, you know, yeah, it's like Ed said, I just thought of the theme music in my head, and I got really excited.
Well, because it was so well used and spaced, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure the fanboys are now going to say Michael Giacchino should score the A-Team movie after sitting through Star Trek and Up, and I think he also did the score to Land of the Lost. So it's like he's had a pretty good summer in terms of just his conducting abilities. So he's
better than Randy Newman.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Randy Newman doing a score.
Yeah, that's... What? I just think of that joke on Mad...
impression to your bow.
I'm sorry?
I mean, you really do need to start doing stand-up soon, because you've got all these impressions that you're adding up, and I get to hear a new one every week. It's great.
I don't do it every week, and, you know, they're not that good. So you're apparently just easy to please. But thank you nonetheless. But, Randy Newman, but anybody can do a Randy Newman impression. That's the other thing, you know, I think. Like, you could do one right now, probably, and it'd be pretty good.
Well, who should score the A-Team, then?
We should just say, okay, go back to the A-Team. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And Joe Carnahan's doing, you know, after all that bullshit he had to go through with, you know, Mission Impossible 3. I never knew the whole story about what happened with that. Like, how far into development of that movie they were when the plug got pulled on MI3. I don't know, but he was supposed to direct it, because Tom Cruise had seen Narc, and he helped get that distributed by Paramount, I believe, and that was really how he got the MI3 gig for. And he was on it for about a year, I think. Is that correct? Or do you guys remember?
It had a full cast. Carrie-Anne Moss was going to be in it. He said, this is from his own lips, Kenneth Branagh was the villain, and he was going to play a Timothy McVeigh kind of figure. Like a loony mad bomber or something, and it sounded interesting. And he hated the movie that we got. He hated it.
Well, I dug it, which I disagree with completely, because I think it's the best of my films.
I like it.
I'm not saying that because I'm not saying that because everyone wants to suck Abrams' dick now because of Star Trek. I liked MI3 when it opened. I saw it at midnight. I thought it was awesome, and that was back when everyone's like, "Fuck Tom Cruise." I was like, that's kind of unfair because he still made a really awesome movie. But you know, it's worked out for the it's worked out for Cruz and Abrams to a greater extent. So I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, but okay, so moaning about a movie this week. It's Phil's pick. Phil, the floor is yours on this one, sir. Because you go ahead and tell everyone what movie you picked for this week.
Yeah, well, ladies and gentlemen, we decided last week that we should talk about movies that not everybody has necessarily seen. I was thinking about talking about Big with Tom Hanks, you know, one of my absolute favorite movies. It's in my top 10. But everyone's seen Big, and everybody loves Big, and everybody probably knows everything.
I thought the problem with Big is when Ed and I revealed a area of the Chud form that gave the quote real life version of Big, and once we described
that,
I think Phil was so creeped out by it. I think he's like, you know, I don't think I need to see this after all. Which I don't know if you guys have heard it. I'm tempted to actually read it right now. If you
should,
but
go
I should read it right now. I'm trying to find it very quickly.
It's in your signature, though.
It is in my signature. I'm trying to find where I posted somewhere. Damn it! It's a great
just
section.
Go to your profile. It should be there.
I'm looking right now. Damn it! But it's a great section. It's by a gentleman by the name of Nordling. I believe he writes for Ain't It Cool News. Correct me if I'm wrong on there. Is it Nordling?
Yeah, I know he's contributed.
He's contributed for their great writer, very sick sense of humor, which, of course, that means I love the guy. He contributed an idea for the real-life ending to Big, and I'm reading it right now, and I'm quoting it as, here it is. Okay, police arrested toy magnate, quote, Josh Baskin, when several of a missing child's clothes are found in his apartment. Although, quote, Baskin claims to be the very same missing child magically aged, police psychologists determined that, quote, Baskin was in actuality a mentally disturbed child molester who assumed the identity of the children he molested and murdered. That's the real ending to Big if it happened in real life. I can't really disagree with that because that's actually pretty on the money and very disturbing.
Oh, God, I'll never be able to say it the same way again. That movie is tainted for me now.
And also,
so
also there's a man-up poster of, like, what that version of Big would look like.
That's just wrong. Look at that. You should never have shown that to me. I was just wrong. Anyway, let's move on. So, the movie we're going to talk about tonight is a movie that... Shut up. So, not a movie that everybody has seen, but everybody I know who I've got to see it has been converted about it. Not a single person I know has a bad word to say about it. Everyone has just been magically entranced by this story of triumph over adversity and of supreme ego. And that movie is the documentary, The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. It doesn't really need the subtitle, folks. It just should be The King of Kong. But that's what it is. And for those of you who don't know, and I really can't imagine that you don't. Basically, The King of Kong takes us into the world of competitive arcade video game playing. Now, this is serious stuff, folks. Believe it or not, that you can go in America to these arcades where, and this is the place to do it, you play it live with your sweaty palms and with those little joysticks where your hand can actually get trapped in the joystick if you dig your hand in too much, and you play these arcade games and you compete for the high score, and if you're lucky enough to get the world record, you too could end up on the Twin Galaxies scoreboard. And Twin Galaxies is this website which is run by this wonderful stuck in his own time hippie gentleman called Walter Day, who runs Twin Galaxies. He's kind of old, but I don't know who's going to take it over after.
It looks like Yoda. If Yoda was a real person, he would look like Walter Day, except
he's wearing a ref uniform all day, and
he's got a big beard, and he talks about being a Jedi at some point in the movie. I mean, he's
living in Iowa.
I know, just like, oof, we're all Jedi.
So we head into the world of competitive video game playing, and we meet a man who, anyone who has seen the movie will never forget, a man by the name of Billy Mitchell, who... before we boo him, we will say that this but this man has achieved some very impressive feats in his time. He has achieved...
It's impressive. It's impressive to
try getting a perfect score on Pac-Man.
It's impressive.
Oh, no. I have a way of summing up this entire thing.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting.
Phil, finish the story here.
I'm sorry. I go ahead, Phil.
Yes, well, as I was saying, yes, Billy Mitchell is, according to the other video game players who do, literally, I'm not making this up, I'm not comically exaggerating, they do worship this man called Billy Mitchell. He has achieved a perfect score on Pac-Man, where they've been able to eat every single dot, kill every single bad guy, get every single power up or whatever, and achieved an absolute perfect score on Pac-Man, which, you know, it's hard. But he also had the world record on what they claim to be is the hardest video game ever made, arcade video game, I mean, Donkey Kong. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can get, I mean, this is the great thing about this movie. If you don't believe these people who are telling you how hard these games are, you can go on your PC and download MAME, which is this program which will emulate arcade games, download the programs, and then you can play these games for yourself, and you can see just how fucking hard Donkey Kong is.
They are hard.
It is, yes.
It's fun. That's why I love old. That's why I'm a retro gamer, because those games, it's simplicity, and yet it's hard as shit.
It's amazing about those retro games is that, I mean, I don't know, some of those games, though, I mean, especially, and there are, you know, other people that do this, of how broken many of those games were, just how, and ball-shatteringly difficult they were.
Yeah.
Because they were so simplistic.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Phil. Sorry about that.
Anyway.
Not at all. Absolutely not. Billy Mitchell, for the longest time, held the world record on Donkey Kong. He actually, in one of the most fascinating parts of the movie, exposed this child, this little kid who claimed to be the world record holder on Donkey Kong back in 83 or something, a long time ago. He exposed him, he went head-to-head with him, crushed him, and then this guy grew up to be, I think, a lawyer and one of Billy's acolytes, as you see throughout the movie. And then, you know, his world record has never been beaten for about 20 years, and then all of a sudden comes in Steve Wiebe. It is Wiebe, folks, not Weeb, as it is incorrectly pronounced by many of the characters in the movie. It's Steve Wiebe, a humble science teacher who has been able to buy his little Donkey Kong machine, and he plays it in his garage, and he's a character that is driven, folks. He has so many skills, and yet he's never been able to be all he could be. And he pushes himself because he knows he's got so much potential. He thinks that he needs to be the best. He thinks he's wasting his potential if he's not the best at something. And he decides he's going to be the best at Donkey Kong. And thus begins this huge saga of Steve trying to break the world record and also being thrust headfirst into this sort of closed-off world of competitive arcade gaming, where literally the world revolves around Billy Mitchell and everyone else is subservient to him. And in comes this guy who's going to challenge the system, and we find out, you know, what happens to this poor guy.
The problem is, like, everyone's being such a dick about it, and he's just like, he just wants to, like, win a record. It's just, like, something just for himself. He's not trying to be, like, a big shot about it, where everyone else takes it too goddamn seriously. This is a chronicle of what happens when someone turns out, you know, grows up to, you know, they're 40 years old, and they still live at home, and they don't kiss a girl. What happens? They obsess with who has the top score in a fucking video game.
There's a best way of summing this up, and I was thinking about this after I was rewatching the documentary. First off, the documentary is fantastic.
It is one of
the best documentaries out there. But it reminds me of this great line in Ed Wood when after they're sitting around in the slaughterhouse, you know, having some sort of rap party, and Sarah Jessica Parker loses her mind, saying, "What the hell's wrong with you people? Don't you realize what you're doing?" And she like, and they're all, "You people are a bunch of freaks." I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And she walks up, and they're like all standing there wondering what was her problem, but it's like, Phil's absolutely right. These, you know, this is the greatest example of why you need to tell you want to tell someone to get a job, because it's a, you know.
Don't you mean Jamie's right? I said that. Damn it.
Oh damn. Well, what Jamie said.
I know, but it's like, wow. This is like, I mean, that's why you like the Wiebe character more, because it's like, it's just something he wants to do because life keeps fucking him over so many times, and he's just doing it. He's doing it because he keeps losing at everything else. Why not go after this? What excuse these other guys have? For God's sakes, grow the fuck up. Like, oh my God.
You see that in the great contrast of when, in the documentary, he's out there swimming with his kids.
Yes.
And you see these guys, who are basically, you know, the poster child, the stereotype for any you know, video game
dork,
you know, nerd. These, yeah, you know, very disgusting looking, you know, and these guys are older guys. These have to be in their 40s.
They're in their 40s for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, the way they look. Oh, man, it makes you want to join a gym.
It's funny you should mention that, because it actually brings very nicely, you say they should get a job. My favorite character in the movie, or should I say the most fascinating to me, is neither Steve nor Billy, but this absolute slime ball by the name of Brian Koo. And yes, he has glasses, folks. He is, I would say, how can I put this? If Billy Mitchell were Kali, Brian Koo would be Mola Ram. That's the best way I can put it. Billy Mitchell is a cult, and he is the high priest. He is the sycophantic lech that attaches to Billy. He says it himself. Billy Mitchell's the king, I'm the prodigy. He's actually trying to beat the real record on Donkey Kong himself, and a couple of other games as well. And incidentally, apparently he holds the world record on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom arcade game. I'd like to challenge him on that. I love that game. Anyway, one of the first lines out of Brian Koo's mouth is, I shit you not, folks, I recently turned 30 and retired. Immediately you hate this man, because that is not, you just immediately, we'll be working till we're dead. We will be. And this guy, I don't know what job he even had. I think it was in banking.
He was a banker, yeah.
And he turned 30 and he retired and he moved to New Hampshire, where the Fun Spot Arcade is, because he used to go down there on weekends and it was quite a slog. Now, you know, apparently he has enough money that he can retire, move literally 5 minutes away from the Fun Spot Arcade and go there every day and hang out with, and hey, look, he's hanging out with friends, he's getting fresh air, kind of, you can't deny that, but still, it's, well, yeah, I know what you mean, but it's just fascinating. He's, actually, one thing I noticed when I rewatched the movie was that, despite the fact that he is so in love with Billy Mitchell, him and Billy never share a scene together. Ever. All of their conversations in the movie take place by phone. It's kind of like a split thing that goes on, but he's always on the phone to him, reporting back on how Steve is doing. Because you see, Steve, through a lot of complicated reasons, which maybe we don't have the time to get into, goes down. He does a taped score of Donkey Kong. And take, you know, he doesn't wipe his child's bottom until he's done.
That's
that.
That's the best scene in the whole. Yeah, it's Phil, and it was our very first podcast, or one of our very second when we were doing our old live days, and I think I spent like 5 minutes talking about how that was the funniest scene I'd seen all year in 2007, because it was just so fucking funny. You couldn't write something like that on, folks. I mean, it's just so damn funny.
And it's a testament to how likable Steve Wiebe is that even in the midst of that scene, you still love him. You still like, do you know what? I probably would have done the same thing. Screw the child. I'd get the high score too. So he submits a taped score, and they don't accept it for a number of controversial reasons.
They basically don't have a real reason. They don't like it, so that's the reason they don't accept it.
Well, not
however,
that.
However, Billy, they said it has to be seen. We need to see it up front, blah, blah, blah. However, Billy sends a tape that is edited.
Yeah.
And it's very, insanely suspicious. It basically flat out says there's heavy-handed editing in this, and they accept it, no questions asked.
No, there's very much, I mean, they talk about, he submits a tape, it's very clear. So they talk about how it has to be a live score.
And it is, it's a live score.
Wiebe beats Mitchell the first time around. And then basically what Mitchell does, which is basically the ultimate definition of what's known as the chicken shit maneuver, and he suddenly whips out another tape, and it's clear that there's something not right here, because the tape will pitch and there's a lot of skipping involved. Mm. And they basically, because everything is engineered towards Mitchell, they accept it and they don't. No one. There's no impartiality to say, well, wait a minute, this guy did it live. Get Mitchell over here and do it live.
Makes it even better is the fact that
the other thing that happens in the movie.
Makes it even better is what makes it even better is the fact that Wiebe actually shows up at that arcade, plays it, and gets to the quote kill zone, which is where the game basically
stops.
It stops because these old games were designed that way, and he got it to around, I think I'm paraphrasing, it was like 960,000 points, somewhere in that ballpark, which makes it the record, according to the movie, was like the highest someone's ever gotten in front of an audience. He still has that record. So they should know by then, like, okay, he clearly wasn't lying because he got to that score in 2 hours in front of our very eyes. So it's pretty obvious that he probably got to over a million by himself after he wiped his kid's ass, apparently. But, you know, that doesn't matter. All these, the other problem is they're all clearly in, they are in business with Billy Mitchell selling some kind of hot sauce. And they, yes. The, you know, the arcade system, as much as we're, you know, we're young guys, all of us, we're in our 20s, but we grew up in when the arcade was the cool place to go. The arcade system, as it stands now, is dead. This arcade system is called Twin Galaxies. It's made up of retro games. This is apparently booming business, so it's one of the few arcades that's still actually doing well.
And if you actually listen very closely when they're interviewing people in the arcade, you can hear nothing but 80s music in the background. So I'm sure it's a very fun place to go.
I'm sure it's a great place to go to. And the thing is, though, it's like they are in the business of wanting to keep this, like, Billy's record. They have a business standpoint to say that, oh, he's got the record. So
well,
the
Walter
whole thing
Day
is
himself
just...
says, Walter Day himself says in the movie, it is very much in our interest to promote Billy Mitchell.
Right. And even he, like, after...
he promotes us.
Yeah, and it makes Walter Day look even worse, because it's like, he's claiming that he's... You think the whole time, like, he's so nice to Weeby in the movie, and you see interviews with him, he seems like a nice, genuine dude. And then he does these dick moves, and you're just like, you're worse than fucking Billy Mitchell.
Well, no, it's because he doesn't object to the fact there's clearly something suspect with the tape.
Yeah,
he does it anyway, and no one calls him out on it.
It makes it even worse because he acts like he's better than everyone else. Like, everyone else is clearly on Billy's side. He's worse just because of that.
And the fact is, there's no explanation as to why Mitchell, he never, agrees, and he never joins to play against Weeby in an actual live match. He never does it. He talks about being the best, but he never follows through. It's the weirdest behavior. I think after the documentary, Mitchell was claiming that he was, misrepresented, but it's like, I don't know what the hell was going on.
Seth Gordon has said otherwise. He said there was actually shit that he left out of the movie because it would have given an even worse portrayal of him. He said he had a much darker kind of edge to him than was shown in the final film, according to Seth Gordon, the director. I'll take the director at his word on this. But
I don't know what kind of a real person Billy Mitchell is, but here's what I do know. Regardless of how he's represented in the documentary, he didn't go down there and play Steve live. If he had, he'd have nothing to bitch about. And all this would go away. You'd be able to say, well, you're a douche, but at least you played him. And he didn't. And that's actually the most fascinating thing to be about the movie, is that it's a, it's a mano a mano story. It's a story that's building up to a climax that never comes.
Right.
And yet you leave the movie completely satisfied. It's very weird that way.
Well, also the fact that, like, and there's a coda on the DVD when you rent it, and they tell what shit that happened after the movie's completed. According to them, Billy Mitchell broke that record in front of a bunch of people. They videotaped it, but they won't release the tape to the public to prove it. That kind of tells you right there.
See,
I don't believe that.
It's just total nonsense.
It shows you. It's like, okay, I don't believe it because they're full of shit. They're just. It's like, it was. According to them, I'm paraphrasing, but Billy Mitchell went to an arcade. He played it. He beat the record. And he did it in front of a bunch of people. He videotaped the whole thing. They won't release that tape, and he only did it in front of a bunch of people who he knows. Okay, so that they would
totally
lie.
Totally gamed, I guess. Yeah. There's no way to fully... And just how, like I said, it's complete idiocy of how this whole thing is structured.
What's even funnier is the fact that you just know... I know for a fact, I feel like I can safely say this, that Weeby will eventually best the current record that Mitchell, quote-unquote, has right now. He'll beat that record again. I have no doubt about that. Like, he tried to last year, and he got pretty damn close, but he didn't hit a million. He'll get it.
He had a million at the end of the movie, though.
He had a million at the end of the movie, but, like, then Mitchell and the coda that happened after the movie was done, he supposedly got bested that record, which I don't believe that for a second. He'll beat that record, though. Weeby will get back, and he'll top that record also.
I also enjoy the scene where basically, what was it? I think it was Mitchell's crony, or it was his lawyer friend. They're freaking out because Weeby shows up unannounced at his restaurant.
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Well, the only people who are making what's funny is if you look at Wikipedia, which again is not the best place for your, knowledge, but the only people who are making complaints about the accuracy of the movie are people, big shock, on Billy Mitchell's side. Everyone on Weeby's side, including, quote, Captain Awesome or whatever his name is.
That guy was a douche, too.
Yeah, he was a douche, too. It's just he happened to be on the hero side, but not for the right reasons, obviously. But And they claim that they don't like Weeby because he's on his side, but the fact of the matter, if Weeby hadn't even had an association with him, they still would have hated him. So that's irrelevant. They would have hated the guy regardless. But, you know, it's just telling that, you know, Weeby never complained about the accuracy of the movie. You know, no one on Weeby's side complained about it. Maybe that's because it made him look good. I mean, I don't know.
But it's weird how you mention, you talk about the accuracy of the movie. It's weird how there is one portion of the movie which pretty much is the crux of it, which has been, you know, Walter Day has said that is what happened.
And okay.
It's because it's one of the most horrible things that happens. Literally, while Steve is at Funspot trying to get the world record live, literally as he's playing it, we pan over to the other side of the arcade, and they are playing Billy's tape of his new world record. You might think, did that actually happen at the same time? Is that just editing? No, that happened. Literally, he's there busting his ass, and they play Billy's taped score and accept it. Literally. And then they cut back, and still, they applaud Steve because he had the balls to come down there and do it, and it's a live score, so it's the best live score, you know. But, you know, and Walter Day has said, yeah, I accepted the score, and I shouldn't have done it. He said he knew immediately once he accepted that score that he shouldn't have done it. But it's weird.
He looks worse than everyone else in the whole movie because he knows better.
Especially for the fact it takes place in 2005.
Yes.
Look how shitty quality that tape was.
Yeah.
No one there. I mean, once again, we're not talking social sophisticates here, but
I know, shock.
I mean, look at these people. You know,
look.
No one says anything.
I'm a nerd. Okay, I'm a nerd.
Oh, yeah.
I acknowledge this. I know film knowledge, but I'm social. I'm not that bad, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the living definition of a dork. I mean, like
the way Billy Mitchell looked back in A2 is the stereotypical look of any douche that is an internet troll or an a-hole on YouTube.
Yeah.
That he had that same kind of hair and that same kind of fuzzy mustache. And the way he's like, he's not even like his, I don't know, it's, for some reason it was weird to me that his eyes are shut looking at the camera. So
that is weird, actually. That is so odd. I noticed that, too. And
there's also the guy who...
Go ahead, Phil.
No, there's also the guy who, and unfortunately I've forgotten his name, but he's the scorekeeper. The official scorekeeper for Twin Galaxies. He's the guy who watches all the tapes that people send him from all around the world.
He's actually the first guy I thought about when I said the quintessential.
He's a fascinating character. Actually, in the extra interviews on the DVD, he actually talks about his daily routine. Basically, he works for an advertising firm, and he works anywhere from 9 in the morning to 11 at night, and then goes home and has to watch all these tapes. And these tapes are huge. I mean, one guy has this 24-hour or 48-hour, if I get actual taped score, and he has to watch the entire thing to make sure there are no anomalies, literally just watching at the screen. And he also plays video games himself, and he says, and I probably get 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night. And if you look at the guy, I don't think he blinks.
Yeah, he's like 40.
No, he looks like utter shit.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, he
would be.
Yeah, but that's, I don't know, it's something that doesn't even matter. Honestly, the smartest person in this whole movie, and I think we can all agree with this, is Steve Wiebe's little girl, exactly, where she's like, and I'm paraphrasing, she goes, Daddy, who cares? It's just a record. That doesn't change
People
anything.
Ruin their lives
People
to be
ruin
in the
their
case.
Lives to break records.
That is the smartest kid. I haven't seen a character that smart in a movie since the little kid at the end of No Country for Old Men who takes Shigar's money and gets the fuck out of there. It's like, you know, what? Who cares? Like, oh my God. Yeah, it's a compelling story because of Weeby and because it's compelling because if Billy Mitchell hadn't been such a dickhead and his followers weren't such dorks, it wouldn't be as compelling. But it's so compelling because you're just like, I cannot believe someone is obsessing over something so trivial. Who cares? I mean, like, it's like saying, like, you know, Dark Knight has the biggest opening weekend record of all time and Nolan being obsessed with that. It's like, well, it's not a big deal because some other movie will come along and break that record. It's not a big deal. It's inevitable. Something's going to come along and do that. And, you know, what are they going to do when someone comes along and beats all of... The other thing is Billy Mitchell, most of his records have been broken. He's been bested for the most part, I think. And the only thing he can latch on to, according to the documentary, was the Donkey Kong record. Like, the Pac-Man record's not his anymore. Pretty much he had like 5 records in his heyday at the same time. I don't think he has any of them anymore, except for Donkey Kong, and of course that's very debatable. anyway, so.
See, now, what I will say, in summation, is my absolute favorite thing about the movie is how accessible it is to all the audiences.
Yes, it
is. This literally takes what it must be the geekiest subject. I mean, as we're talking about it, folks, you can understand. This could have turned out like Trekkies. Not that I'm saying Trekkies is a bad film, but for a lot of people would watch the documentary Trekkies about Star Trek fans, and they'd just take it as a comedy piece. They'd just say, ha-ha, look at that guy dressed as a Klingon. That's funny. He's a dork. This isn't like that. I mean, this takes literally the geekiest subject imaginable, and it creates, you become involved in it. You actually find it fascinating. The thing I find most fascinating about it is the concept of the kill screen, the discovery of the kill screen on Donkey Kong, and having to constantly beat the world record. You see, folks, if you manage, apparently the kill screen kicks in on Donkey Kong on the 22nd screen or something like that, and the game is so hard that most people will never ever see it. They'll never get to the 22nd screen. But because the kill screen has been obtained, it is not going to be enough if you're going for the world record just to get through Donkey Kong to the 22nd screen and hit the kill screen and survive. No, you have to literally stay dawdling on those levels, jumping over barrel. After barrel, just to get your points up. And hopefully, eventually, when you get to the kill screen, if you get there, you will have enough points to beat the world record. It's not enough to just play through it. You've got to look death in the face in these barrels and jump over them constantly. I just find it absolutely fascinating. I really do.
The one thing that I'd also like to add, or not add, but sort of segue about this, is that the documentary was very successful. For some reason, they didn't nominate it that year for Best Documentary, for the reason why the Academy is full of shit.
It's conceivable.
I know. Anyway, you're right, though, completely. But now there's talk about doing a live-action film. with less cartoons. Which, yes. Those guys really were cartoonish, let's be fair.
Brett Ratner film.
A what?
A Brett Ratner film.
Oh, God.
This is the kind of thing that screams David Lynch.
Yeah, or Michelle Gondry, you know. But anyway.
Why would you do a film on this? Everything
I don't
is.
Know.
There's no reason
it's,
to.
Because, you know what? Because, you know why?
Because to get the ending that we didn't get in
exactly.
The
that's why you want that ending where they face off and, like, playing the Eye of the Tiger, and they're both wearing, like, the workout glove, you know, like.
They got headbands. You know.
Exactly. Like, that's why you do it. I don't. Will they make it? I don't know. They might.
I hope.
They might not.
Why? There's no reason. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, that was the same. The only other example I can think of that was with Lords of Dogtown and Dogtown the City Boys. I don't know why you would have made, and I haven't seen the documentary, I saw the movie. It's like, I don't know why bother making the movie if you had such a great documentary. It just didn't, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know.
There's no greater thing here.
It's also interesting, though, how... I remember when Siskel and Ebert were reviewing this documentary called Hoop Dreams, which they absolutely fell in love with.
Yes.
And I still have to see it, unfortunately. I'm going to pick it up. But they were saying how there were twists and turns in Hoop Dreams that if they were a fiction film, you wouldn't believe them. You would say they were too implausible. Unfortunately, I don't know what they are. But it's true of this movie as well. If this had started out as just a fictional story, you'd question a lot of it. You'd say it was completely implausible that human beings could act this way and that they could do the things that they do.
That I could believe. I could believe that because people are genuinely stupid. So I hate to say that about my fellow man, but don't got much faith in them, you know. I don't know. Like, who would play the characters?
Is that how we're ending the show tonight, Jamie?
What? I hate people.
You've given up on humanity.
I've given up. Yeah, exactly. I've given up. No, I actually, as I said, I've not so much humanity, but my fellow film going John and Jane Doe or film going public, they've won my respect back because, you know, as of this weekend, Inglourious Basterds has made $100 million domestically. I don't follow box office. I try not to that often, that thoroughly. But when you love a flick like I did with Bastards, you want it to see it succeed. So that aside, and District 9 also, but. That's off topic. So the question about a scripted version of The King of Kong, the biggest thing I'm curious about is who would you cast to play Billy? Because you don't want unknowns. You would want name actors to play these characters, and it's like, who the hell would play them?
It would be like Ben Stiller doing his role from Dodgeball all over again to be Billy Mitchell.
I was actually thinking of Zachary Quinto as Billy Mitchell, although he's a little too young.
That's a great choice.
He's actually a little too young, but I could see him being a complete douchebag.
No, you put him behind that beard. People will look as old as you want them to be. That's the power of beards.
But I would think of Zachary.
That awful hair.
I would think of Zachary Quinto actually as him, as Billy Mitchell, and for some strange reason.
I could see Jason Bateman as Steve.
As Steve, I was actually thinking of Brandon Ralph, and I say this because, you know, I say this in all honesty because that guy, everyone says he's such a great guy, and I thought he was great as Superman, and yet he's constantly getting the shit kicked out of him, just like the real Steve Wiebe in that he thinks he's about to make his big thing, and then he does, and he gets fucked over somehow, and he just keeps persisting. It's like, you know, maybe they'll do the Superman sequel. No, we're not going to do one. Well, they might use him in a reboot. Looks like that's not going to happen now. Well, I'm going to do this Dylan Dog movie. That's not going to get made. Oh, wait, it did get made, but it might not come out in theaters. Oh, wait, I'm going to be on Chuck, but who knows what will happen with that. And yet the poor dude is consistently just pushing it. It's like, you know, that's Steve Wiebe, man. That's who I could kind of see that as Steve and Billy. But Jason Bateman, actually, is more age-appropriate, but he would be more smart-assy. And as we've seen in the movie, Steve's not a smart-ass. But that's a good choice, Jason Bateman. I don't know who you guys think. But when I was thinking, when we watched the movie last night, I just sort of came to the realization, like those. If I was making the movie, that's who I would cast as Steve and Billy.
I just think Jason Bateman, because if you can, as you said yourself in one of your posts this week, if you can get out of a film like Hancock with your dignity intact and with everyone still liking you, then that makes you a likable guy, and that's what you need.
He came out with his dignity intact for Teen Wolf 2, so you know he's good.
That's true.
I do, and I've seen Teen Wolf 2.
I just realized that, although it would be kind of a repeat of what he did earlier. What about Paul Rudd as Billy Mitchell?
Paul Rudd would be an awesome Billy Mitchell, actually.
He'd be like Brian Fantana, basically.
Yeah, but you know, he could sort of dial it back.
A much dorkier Brian Fantana.
And you know what? Who else could be a good Steve Wiebe? Jason Segel.
There you go.
Or we could play against type and have Jason Segel play Billy, because Segel's never played a dickhead yet. Have him be the dickhead.
No, he was. He's also undeclared.
So. His character, I haven't seen, you're right, actually, I haven't seen Undeclared in a while,
He was a weirdo in that movie, so in that show.
Yeah, in that show.
One of the extra interviews on the DVD, Billy Mitchell says that apparently people tell him he looks like Lorenzo Lamas, so maybe
Not only is he that deluded,
he's deluded from 1992. My God.
I think we know now. I think it's obvious why he has that look now, because he wants to look like Jesus, because everyone worships him anyway. So he might as well just go all out and look like that. So, hey, Jim Caviezel can play, you know, Billy Mitchell. Who knows? He hasn't done anything
Jim Caviezel has too much charisma.
Oh, that's mean. But true.
I think if you were to get someone, you would, you know, that makes sense. You just get Paul Rudd in there.
Paul Rudd would be like an awesome Billy. Choice. Would be Billy.
Well, then, why don't we compromise, then? Why don't we have Jason Bateman as Steve and Brandon Routh as Brian Koo. He can do the glasses thing. We put him on a silly wig.
I don't think Brandon Routh is that dorky, though.
He's too in shape.
Yeah, he's too in shape to be. I don't know if that, because I couldn't see him, like, if that's the case, you know, I don't know.
Logic, we might as well just have Russell Crowe from The Insider to play Wiebe.
I was thinking of him as the scorekeeper guy.
Russell, just don't blink.
No, you have J.K. Simmons as the score as the ref.
Actually, the ref should be played by Al Pacino.
It's the insider reunion we all wanted.
Exactly, Michael Mann. Michael Mann's the King of Kong.
There you go.
Actually, that's a good
idea. Dakota Fanning as Steve's daughter.
She's like 17, dude. That's a little.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying a little. Thing.
10 years older, dude. I think the kid's like 7 years old or something. I don't know. Kid's probably like 10 by now. She's probably 30 by now, actually.
That's still a great idea. Michael Mann's the King of Kong. I'd love to see a parody video of that. That'd be great.
Oh, that would be
digital.
I prefer older Michael Mann, which means obviously a lot of wide shots, synth music, talking about following a code. There you go, folks. There's a parody video waiting to happen.
Actually, that would be awesome, actually. Michael Mann should make this movie, because after Public Enemies, that was supposed to be his big commercial property, and then that didn't work out. Here we go, folks. Come on.
Start your letter writing campaign. Get right on now. Petition online right now.
Michael Mann. So we've officially settled on the cast. So it's Jason Bateman as Steve. Who's playing Billy?
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is Billy, and directed by Michael Mann. Did we settle on Walter Day, who would play him? Did we actually settle on that, or...?
I thought we were going to have J.K. Simmons.
Oh, J.K. Simmons. Wouldn't he have a little bit... Well, I guess. I don't know. He seems like he'd be a little bit...
Either that or you got to get an Alan Arkin, so...
I think J.K. Simmons would be too dignified to play Walter Day. I think that would be a little bit too below even him, to be
honest. Alan Arkin, I could see. I could really see that.
I don't know. I guess J.K. Simmons would be fine. I'm trying to... The moment we end this podcast, I'm going to be like, I've got it.
That beard is so thick, you could really put anybody in there. You could actually say...
Wait, I got it, You take Jeff Bridges from Iron Man.
Yes.
Just put a ref's uniform on him, you're good to go.
There you go, dude.
Sold.
Yeah. That's actually a really good idea, actually. Wow, this is we're ending on a high note this week at Movie Moon.
And this is from folks who apparently didn't want a remake 5 minutes ago, but now we're all excited.
Well, that's true, actually.
So...
Yeah, you throw out the challenge, we met it, so, you know, the next documentary that needs to be made into a movie will, you know, I don't know what it'll be, but we'll meet the challenge, fantasy casting. Unfortunately, the movie will, if they even make it, it will be nowhere near as good as we just played it up as in our heads on this podcast.
The only way you could beat Michael Mann is if it was Michael Bay's The King of Kong. There you go, there's another parody video you can do right there.
Yeah, you could do that. Man. The problem is then you have to put Megan Fox in it. I'm sick of talking about her.
You know, it all reminds me of that great video someone did of Michael Bay eating cereal, and they took the music from Con Air, even though that was not his movie. Oh, glorious. You could do the same exact thing with the King of Kong. Just watching the garage door roll up and him approaching the machine. Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
But, if it came out the same weekend as Tron 2, that would be the best. I can have my arcade double bill.
Arcade. It would be actually pretty cool, actually.
Like Pac-Man Fever while you're watching it.
It would be a remix of Pac-Man Fever.
Oh, man. That's a good idea.
Actually, yeah, because I'm surprised it hasn't been remixed yet. But anyway, that's a good choice. That was a very good choice this week, Phil. We had a very lively discussion.
We did. About
a half hour on it. So I guess it wraps up this week's Movie Mo. Next week, I don't know if it's going to be my turn or Lou's turn, our MIA Canadian. I'll think of something.
Lou hasn't picked yet. So
he's not picked yet. Lou has two movies in mind, which we won't name out loud. Very different, I will give him that. And I say it in a good way. But he's like, well, you guys decide, and I'm not going to decide for him. That's his call. So yeah, I guess next...
Make a choice.
Exactly. It's Sophie's choice. Which movie do you want to watch, or which child do you want to kill? It means the same thing to us here at Movie Moan. Okay, so
and by the way, in the comment section, if any of you guys have suggestions, we'll listen to them.
Yeah,
by all means, listen.
Oh, and the only paraphrase, the only thing that I would stipulate is let's not be something easy like tell them about the Dark Knight, like nothing like that. I mean, like
or bad movies for that matter. Because once again, I said this last week. It's so easy to rip into a bad movie, and so many people are doing it.
Yeah.
There's no reason, you know, let's not rehash stuff. I do not want to spend time talking about Leprechaun 3 in the Hood. And also, and for anyone who wants to submit something, it's got to be something that's kind of accessible. Now, I myself have much more access than, say, Phil or Jamie. But once again, it's got to be something that's got to be in print that you can get a hold of easily. So nothing
Leonard
like that's
Paul
not on TV.
It is.
How dare you?
I would love to see Leonard Part 6 just to see like how bad that movie was, because there's the infamous video of Siskel and Ebert just bitching, like worse than I've ever seen, where Ebert just goes off on it, like, oh my God, I can't believe it, Columbia made this movie.
The richest man in showbiz holding a Coke to the screen, he should be ashamed of himself.
Is it really that bad?
Well, you should have seen the VHS review of Ghost Dad. So.
Well, I mean, the problem. Yeah, I was about to say. I mean, he complains about Leonard Part 6, and then 2 years later, or 3 years later, you make Ghost Dad. So it's like, come on, Ebert. Yeah. You know, let's be fair here. Damn it.
Ghost Dad does look worse. I'd rather watch Leonard.
I've seen bits of Ghost Dad, but I couldn't sit through it even as a child. I never watched The Cosby Show as a kid. That was never one of my childhood shows, actually. Family Matters was, and stuff like that. But The Cosby Show, no. Just everyone says like, who was your TV father? And I always say, well, Carl Winslow, of course, and that's mine. But and the people say, what's his name? Leo Huxtable? That's not mine. I just never watched The Cosby Show. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, it was prior generation, so I don't know. I mean, for me, it was obviously there was The Simpsons, and then there was Married with Children, so.
Which, yeah, Married with Children is probably, it was a good choice. And now Ed O'Neill will be returning to our TV screens in 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, what's he doing this time?
He's doing the show called Modern Family.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's right. You don't have a TV.
My TV's not hooked up.
Yeah, you
so. You
choose to go the Hulu route, which is better, to be fair. I've seen shows on Hulu. Yeah, it's a new show.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's good for Conan O'Brien bits, but good seeing Ed O'Neill working, you know, continuing to work.
I like that. He's for a while after Mr. Bundy, he was doing dramatic roles. I think he was in the ill-fated reboot of Dragnet.
Apparently that was really good,
I heard.
The first season was, anyway.
Oh, the first season? I heard the whole show was good, actually, but
Not when they tried to reboot it for the second season. First he was very good, and then he's probably the best thing, if anything, out of John from Cincinnati. So
I did not watch that show. I heard it's terrible. One of the few HBO
stations.
Is it Arliss bad?
I don't know.
Okay. That's
Arliss bad.
That's the problem, though. When you say something's bad on HBO, you have to compare it to Arliss. Are we reaching that level of shittiness?
Oof.
Just saying. I mean, it's like, is it Sopranos good or is it Arliss bad? That's the way it goes. Well, actually, strike that. You would probably say, is it Wire good or Arliss bad?
I don't think it'd be Wire good.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, could it reach that level?
And the thing is, when we say Arliss bad, are we saying L word terrible or what?
Yeah, we're talking about HBO, though. But yeah, let's change
right.
that. Elwood, actually, I like Elwood Terrible. That's actually an even better one, because Arliss is the easy target. No one shits on the L word, and didn't that just end, I think?
The L word just ended, and I give it respect for what it was trying to do, but when you try, and I remember seeing the first season, thought it was all right, but you try watching the later seasons, and every season's like a different genre. Man, is it terrible. Now, Jane Lynch shows up in a few episodes. Jane Lynch is top-notch in anything. But,
she is, actually. Except for anything she headlines herself for some reason. She can't. She's one of those people, she's a good supporting player, but do not make her the lead of any movie.
What has she headlined? I have no idea.
Hasn't she headlined? I could have sworn she headlined some.
She's never headlined in anything.
You sure?
Huh. Yeah, I'm pretty sure on this.
I could have sworn.
She's not a headlining Glee. That's a supporting thing.
Yeah, but who watches Glee? Like, I didn't watch it this week, and
surprisingly, someone is.
Oh, that show did well?
Getting press.
Press does not equal. That's the problem, though. See, Ed and I love 30 Rock, and yet 30 Rock is horrible in the ratings. And yet, if you listen to the press, it's a huge hit show.
Well, that's because NBC just generally sucks.
That's horseshit. Well, I mean, the problem is. Well, I think the problem with 30 Rock is you just can't assess that to people. I love the show; it's brilliant, but it's not NBC per se. There is nothing that could. I don't know any network that could have had 30 Rock that would be somehow successful. I don't think that's just NBC's problem, because The Office does pretty well for NBC. I could see The Office doing well on any network, because that's just a funny show, I think. I could be wrong on that one. But then again, I mean, NBC, talking about how bad they are, I mean, they fucking renewed Parks and Recreation. Like, what the fuck, people? Like, really? That show is awful. I mean, I'm all for giving a show a second chance season, because considering that was a mid-season show and only had 6 episodes, but that literally was The Office 2.0. There was nothing original about that show. They pretty much filled in every role except they recast it with some of the character to less effect. And everyone keeps saying, like, oh, well, The Office didn't start off that good in the U.S. And I say bullshit, because when The Office premiered in the U.S., it actually got great ratings, and the big fear, if you remember, was, oh my god, they're doing an American version of The Office, it's going to be terrible, and everyone said, oh my god, it's awesome, I can't believe it.
Thought it would go in a different direction the way it did.
That's the thing, though, it went in a different direction starting with season 2, and they found their footing pretty much the start of season 2, they found their footing. So, but it's revisionist history to say that people didn't like The Office initially. It's kind of bullshit. Yeah. The ratings are terrible, but, I mean, that's, you know, in terms of reviews, people were behind it from day one. Mm. I went on that long rant right there.
Right.
I couldn't help it. But anyway, that is this week's edition of Movie Moan. Folks, thank you for listening. Wrap it up, Phil.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Strangely.
I'm just kidding.
Phil can't talk about American shows. He's like, I don't know what that is. You ruined Life on Mars, you fucking bastards. I can't watch. Well, and to be fair, we did ruin Life on Mars. We cannot.
Jamie, enough!
Oh, yeah.
Stop it!
What?
Stop. Well, thankfully, the UK version is now on DVD. I'm watching it now, and Gene Hunt should be knighted. So,
if he hasn't already, and thank God,
I hope
done
the
space.
Hell he was.
We haven't done Space yet, thank God. We almost got mixed Space.
Oh, that was thankfully aborted, much like the IT crowd. That was also thankfully aborted.
Yeah, so thank God. But I'm sure there's some other British show that will soon be remade. I'm waiting for the American version of Mr. Bean.
No,
oh, man.
Will,
I'm telling you, some idiot executive probably has it in their head right now.
That would have happened. That would have happened ages ago if it were ever going to happen.
I don't know.
That's funny you mentioned that about America, because they're going to try and do an American version of Skins. Oh, and MTV is doing it. So you know it's going to be utter shit.
Yeah, I mean, you Brits are finally getting our shit. You're getting the Law & Order. You just got one this past year, Law & Order UK. So I'm sure, like, soon we'll be seeing, like, the Andy Griffith Show, the UK version. So I'm looking forward to that, actually.
They don't. Oh,
what? Man. You don't think it's a good idea?
No, wait, they do have bumpkins in England, so.
Yeah, same thing, I guess. But anyway.
Different, though.
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We will see you next week at the movies. Have a good one. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Should